Now we come to chapter 18. We're still on the second missionary journey of Paul. Now he waited around in Athens. He's alone. He's waiting for Timothy and Silas to come and join him and bring reports from the church in Thessalonica and Berea. Well, what does he do after he waits a while and he's had his missionary thrust in Athens? He goes on. And we're told in chapter 18, after these things, Paul departed from Athens and he came to Corinth. Now, I've made that trip by bus from Athens to Corinth. Paul apparently walked it. It takes you a long time to walk it. And it's a beautiful walk, though, and lots more beautiful drive. By the way, you go by where the Battle of Salamis was fought at sea, where the Persian fleet was destroyed. You go by many historical places, and then you come to the city of Corinth. And Corinth was the most wicked city of that day. Now, when we take up these epistles where Paul wrote, like he wrote to the Thessalonians, and he wrote to the Philippians, and he wrote to the Corinthians, I intend to give a background of the city and the reason that he wrote as he did and the message. But now, I just want to very briefly say that the city of Corinth was probably the most wicked city of the day. It was the Sodom and Gomorrah of that day, or it was the Las Vegas of that day. It was the place where you could go and live it up. Sex and drink and all other sensual pleasures were there. There are the remains there of a great Roman bath, and that's where they went to sober up. And there in the distance is the temple that was to Aphrodite or to Venus. And there were 1,000 so-called vestal virgins there. And they were anything but virgins. They were prostitutes. And sex was a religion. That's not new today. That was true back there. Corinth was one of the most wicked cities of the day. People came from all over the empire to the city of Corinth. They really could entertain you. They had 2 tremendous theaters there. Now, Paul came there. And here was his terminus of his second missionary journey as well as his third missionary journey. And here, I believe, is where Paul probably had one of his most effective ministry. I would say that in Corinth and in Ephesus, Paul had his greatest ministry. Ephesus, a religious center, and Corinth was a sin center. And both of them were great commercial centers. Now, when he came there, what did he do? Verse 2, and he found a certain Jew named Aquila, born in Pontus, lately come from Italy, with his wife Priscilla, because that Claudius had commanded all Jews to depart from Rome, and he came unto them. Now, that was in the city of Corinth, this Jewish couple, and they were tent makers also. And they had been formerly in Rome. And the reason that they left Rome was one of these waves of anti-Semitism that has rolled like a wave over the earth. It rolled in that day several times in the Roman Empire, and this was one of them. And Claudius commanded all Jews to leave Rome. And they got out, and among them was Aquila and Priscilla, a very wonderful couple. And Paul naturally came in to them, since they were in the same business. Notice verse 3. And because he was of the same craft, he abode with them and wrought, for by their occupation they were tent makers. So they had a great deal in common, as you can see. And so we find here that Paul says, verse 4, and he reasoned in the synagogue every Sabbath. I think that Aquila and Priscilla took him to the synagogue. And he went there, and the custom was to call upon a visitor from out of town. And Paul got up and spoke, and we're told there that he reasoned in the synagogue every Sabbath and persuaded the Jews and the Greeks. And when Silas and Timotheus were come from Macedonia, Paul was pressed in the spirit and testified to the Jews that Jesus was Christ. Now, You'll notice that Paul waited around in Athens for Timothy and Silas to come. They didn't show up. He went on down to Corinth, and now they come. They bring him the report. And when we get to the Thessalonian epistle, you'll find out he wrote an epistle at this time. But now he feels he must speak out, and he testifies that Jesus was the Messiah. And when they opposed themselves and blasphemed, he shook his raiment and said unto them, "Your blood be upon your own heads. I'm clean. From henceforth I'll go unto the Gentiles." And apparently it was at this time that Paul made the break that took him to the Gentile world. From here on, it would seem that Paul's ministry was largely to the Gentiles. You find that true in Ephesus, and I think you find it true in Rome. Verse 7, "And he departed thence and entered into a certain man's house named Justus, one that worshipped God, whose house joined hard to the synagogue. And Crispus, the chief ruler of the synagogue, believed on the Lord with all his house." Now you can see he had many converts among the Jews in that place. And many of the Corinthians, hearing, believed and were baptized. Now there was a great company, you see, of Corinthians that believed. Now we're going to see what happened to Paul here, because actually he spent about 18 months in the city of Corinth, and he had a tremendous ministry there. We find now in verse 9, the Lord now speaks to the Apostle Paul, because he's coming into a new great dimension of his missionary endeavors. I'm reading now verse 9. "Then spake the Lord to Paul in the night by a vision, 'Be not afraid, but speak, and hold not thy peace. For I am with thee, and no man shall set on thee to hurt thee. For I have much people in this city.'" Now that'd be about the last place that you'd expect that the Lord had much people in that place. I have been through Las Vegas quite a few times, and I'll be honest with you, and you look at that crowd, and if the Lord said, "I've got much people in this place," I wouldn't question the Lord, but I sure wouldn't get that impression from looking at the people. And I'm of the opinion that Paul, who had been there for quite a while now, he's wondering about that. And I am of the opinion when he received this opposition, he was ready to leave and go somewhere else. But what happened? Well, the Lord now detains him. And he says, "I want you here. I have much people in this city." And as we indicated before, this was with Ephesus, probably the two places where he did the most outstanding work in his ministry. Now we are told in verse 11, he continued there a year and 6 months, teaching the word of God among them. For 18 months, Paul ministered there. Now, again, the gospel's going to cause opposition. And what happens in verse 12? "And when Gallio was the deputy of Achaia, the Jews made insurrection with one accord against Paul and brought him to the judgment seat." Now, that's the bema that Paul talks about in the first epistle to the Corinthians. And the second epistle, the bema, the judgment seat. And I've been there. I've sat on it myself in the ruins of Corinth, and I have a picture made standing on top of the judgment seat that was there. Now, they brought the charge against him, saying, "This fellow persuadeth men to worship God contrary to the law." Now, not the law of the Roman Empire, and not the law of Corinth, but according to the Mosaic system. Now notice this, verse 14, "And when Paul was now about to open his mouth, Gallio said unto the Jews, 'If it were a matter of wrong or wicked lewdness, O ye Jews, reason would that I should bear with you. But if it be a question of words and names and of your law, look ye to it, for I will be no judge of such matters.' And he drave them from the judgment seat." Now, notice this. "Then all the Greeks took Sosthenes, the chief ruler of the synagogue, beat him before the judgment seat, and Gallio cared for none of those things." Now, I have heard and I've read this man Gallio, he has been condemned in no uncertain terms, that he was an unfeeling, typical Roman judge of that day, and on and on why it goes. I want to say for the defense of Gallio, I thank God for him, and I personally think that he took the right position. And I'll tell you what I mean by that. You see, he is probably the first one who made a distinction between church and state. Gallio said, now, if this concerns some religious thing, then you take it and handle it yourself, because that doesn't concern the Roman law, or I'm a Roman magistrate, and I will not interfere in religious matters. You will have to handle that. And he adopted a hands-off policy. Now, I want to say this, and I want to say it kindly. I wish the Supreme Court of the United States would adopt the same policy. Stay hands-off when it has to do with religion. And this idea of prayer in schools, why, the public school in America was founded by Christians, and prayer has been made down all through these years. What right have a group of secular men to come along and make a decision that you can't have prayer in the schools, you see? I like Gallio. I don't know about you. He separated church and state, and he said, I won't interfere in that. If they're having prayer in school, then they can have prayer in school. And if they're not having it, we won't force it. You see, hands off. I like Gallio. I think that he did the right thing. He would not interfere with this man Paul preaching in the city of Corinth at all, because he says this has to do with your religion. And we are a city where you have freedom. You have religious freedom. And thank God for that. The unfortunate thing today is that this matter of freedom of speech has been abused in one direction, the wrong direction, and freedom of religion's been abused in the other. It's been curtailed because under the guise and the pretense that we are trying to separate church and state. Well, if you separate church and state, you'll keep your nose out of that which refers to the church. And if a school wants to have prayer, that's their business, and it's not the business of a little group of men in Washington or anywhere else. May I say to you that that's what freedom of religion is. And this man, Gallio, I'm going to vote for him if he ever runs for office, I'll tell you that. We need men with this kind of a vision. It says Gallio cared for none of those things. Well, of course not. He's a secular magistrate. He's not going to come into the church and try to settle an argument about predestination and free will. That's not his business. He'll stay out of that. Now, let's move on. Verse 18. And Paul, after this, tarried there yet a good while, and then took his leave of the brethren, and he sailed thence into Syria, and with him Priscilla and Aquila, having shorn his head in Cenchrea, for he had a vow. Now I find a great many folk, they really find fault with Paul because he made a vow. And they said, well, this man is the man that said we're not under law, we're under grace, and that he shouldn't have done it. Now, my friend, wait just a minute. Are you saying Paul shouldn't do this? Well, then you're making a little law for Paul, then, aren't you? And you want him to do it your way. Now, under grace, friends, if you want to make a vow, you can make it. And if you don't want to make a vow, you don't have to. Now, Paul didn't force anybody to. In fact, he said that you didn't have to. But if Paul wants to do it, that's his business. And that's the marvelous freedom that we have in the grace of God today. Now, it's not a relationship to a bunch of little cliches and laws that a few put down the day of these super saints. They say you can't do this and you can't do that. Now, I want to say this to you very candidly. The Lord Jesus said to me, if you love me, keep my commandments. And my relationship is to him, and I'm responsible to him, and I want to have fellowship with him, and I'm not going to come in your little wicket gate. I'm sorry. Don't tell me what I can't do. He tells me what I can't do. I'm trying to obey him. I want to follow him. I'm not going to follow you. And if I want to eat meat, I'm going to eat meat. If I want to observe this day, I'm going to observe this day. You see, whatever you do, do it unto the Lord. Whether you eat meat, meat won't commend you to God. But whatever you do, whether it be to eat or drink, do all for the glory of God. My friend, that's the important thing. So let's not find fault with Paul here either. My Gallio and Paul get in trouble right in this particular place, but I want to defend both of them. Now, will you notice that he's returning, actually, on his second missionary journey. He's going back, having made Corinth the terminus, and he sails from Cenchrea. Now, Cenchrea is the seaport over on the east side. There is the Corinthian Peninsula, and there's a canal through there today. But there wasn't in that day. But they would pull a boat through there. I have a picture taken of where the rocks there are worn, where the boats were pulled over that isthmus and taken over to the other side. Now, Cenchrea was the port of Corinth on the eastern side. And so they go down there, they take ship. Now he's not going west any farther, and he's sailing for home. And we find that what he did, Priscilla and Aquila went with him. And he's now made a vow, and he came to Ephesus, and he left them there. Now they apparently are going to open up a branch store over in Ephesus. This matter of persecuting the Jew, the anti-Semitism of the day that drove them out of Rome, has caused them now to go to Corinth and Ephesus both. And I think they just opened branch stores there. He came to Ephesus, left them there, but he himself entered into the synagogue, reasoned with the Jews. Now, you remember when he came out, the Spirit of God wouldn't let him come there. But now he comes back by there, but he doesn't stay. When they desired him to tarry longer with them, he consented not, but bade them farewell, saying, I must by all means keep this feast that cometh in Jerusalem. Now again, somebody says, what business does he have to keep a feast? Well, notice his background. He's like Simon Peter. He has the background of the Mosaic system. He knows a lot of his friends are going to be in Jerusalem for the feast, and he wants to go up and witness to them. He says, I must by all means keep this feast that cometh in Jerusalem. Why? Well, under grace, if he wants to, that's his business. But I will return again unto you, if God will. Now, Paul saw that there was a great door open in Ephesus, and he had a missionary heart, and he wanted to come back there. And he sailed from Ephesus now. And Ephesus was a great city in that day. And when he had landed at Caesarea, and gone up and saluted the church, he went down to Antioch. Now, he came into Caesarea, and Caesarea was the port, either there or Joppa, that he could go up to Jerusalem, make his report. Then he went up the coast. He'd been up that way before, and he came to the home church, which was Antioch. Now, Paul has concluded his second missionary journey. Now notice, he goes immediately into the third missionary journey. After he'd spent some time there, he departed and went over all the country of Galatia. Now this is his third trip through the Galatian country. And Phrygia, in order, strengthening all the disciples. Now, we'll find that he's going to come to Ephesus now on the third missionary journey. And that again is something very important to see. Comes to Ephesus where he's going to have a great ministry. But now someone else had come in there, and here's another great preacher in the early church that we don't seem to know too much about. And yet we can know a great deal about him. There are at least 12 things that are said about this man Apollos, and to me they're all good. Now notice this. And a certain Jew named Apollos. Now he had the background of the law. And we're told he was born at Alexandria. Now, all of these things are in his favor. He was born at Alexandria. Now, he's first of all named Apollos. That's a Greek name. He was a Hellenist of the diaspora. But he hadn't gone into Greece, or he wasn't in that area, Macedonia. He was born at Alexandria, and that's the north part of Africa, north part of Egypt. And it was founded by Alexander the Great, and it was one of the great centers of Greek culture. A great university was there. One of the finest libraries in the world was there. The Septuagint was translated there. A Jewish temple was there. One of the great centers of the early church. It was first Jerusalem, Antioch, and then Alexandria. Athanasius, Tertullian, and Augustine, three of the great men of the early church, came from there. And Philo, a contemporary of Apollos, who mingled Greek philosophy with Judaism, Platonism and Judaism, and Apollos obviously was influenced by this background. Now we're told that third thing, he was an eloquent man. He was a great orator, equal with Paul. And we're told here he was mighty in the Scriptures, and he came to Ephesus. That is, he was trained in the Old Testament. Now we find the man was instructed in the way of the Lord. He had a formal education by word of mouth, not by revelation. Now notice the sixth thing, and being fervent in the Spirit, not the Holy Spirit. He had a passion for the things of God. This is the thing that is said about him here. Very frankly, friends, he was a great man. Fact of the matter is, he was an outstanding man. Now will you notice, he spake and talked diligently the things of the Lord. That is, what he knew. What did he know? The eighth thing is, knowing only the baptism of John. He never heard of Jesus. He just heard about John the Baptist. And he was a great preacher, but that's as far as he could go. And now notice the ninth thing. He began to speak boldly in the synagogue, whom when Aquila and Priscilla had heard, they took him unto them. They invited him home for dinner after the service, because they saw he didn't know. And now the tenth thing, and they expounded unto him the way of God more perfectly. They told him about Jesus. And now notice the 11th thing. When he was disposed to pass into Achaia, the brethren wrote exhorting the disciples to receive him, who when he was come helped them much which had believed through grace. You see, he was a brilliant man. But up to the time that Aquila and Priscilla took him home for dinner, he didn't know the gospel of the grace of God. And here's a case where a woman helped a preacher a great deal. She told him something he didn't know. Now, notice the 12th thing. For he mightily convinced the Jews, and that publicly, showing by the Scriptures that Jesus was Christ. Now, this is the man that's before us. He went before Paul into the city of Ephesus. Now remember, they've only heard of the baptism of John, and Aquila and Priscilla witnessed that.